More women are being put behind bars in the U.S. The female prison population in this country rose 646% from 1980 to 2010, largely because of drug offenses. So what happens once these women are paroled? Jennifer Kobina is an assistant professor of criminal justice at Michigan State University, and she's lead author of a study on female parolees, a study that was published in the journal Race and Justice. Jennifer, you surveyed more than 400 women who are on probation and parole for drug crimes in Michigan. What did you learn about how they try to keep from becoming repeat offenders?
We found that women on probation and parole who lived in poor neighborhoods where crime was prevalent, they were much more likely to use isolating strategies to avoid offending compared to female probationers and parolees who lived in neighborhoods that were well off. So, for instance, we found that African Americans who lived in poor neighborhoods, they often tried to avoid everyone in order to stay out of trouble. But women who lived in better, more affluent neighborhoods, they used the strategy of spending time with law-abiding individuals. And so really, the most important thing to remember is that women who lived in neighborhoods that were well off, they used less restrictive strategies, while women who lived in poor neighborhoods that had high rates of crime, they're more likely to use restrictive strategies, which really limits their ability to fully participate in public life.
So as you heard these stories for your study, Jennifer, what ideas came to your mind for improving this, being able to improve the lives and the outcomes of female parolees, but especially the black female parolees and probationers?
Yeah, we do have a few recommendations. One, we believe that case managers, probation and parole agents, and community program staff should provide women with information on housing in safe areas. And then efforts should be made to provide placement assistance so that women can actually live in these areas. The second recommendation is on a much larger scale, and that is we believe it's important to reinvest in low-income communities and provide programs and services that would be useful in helping women who live in high-crime neighborhoods develop accessible networks. And the reason why it's important to develop accessible networks is because studies show that having ties to pro-social or positive networks has been shown to provide a disincentive to commit crimes. So that can be what women particularly need in order to reduce their risk of reoffending. And then the third recommendation we would suggest is confronting discriminatory housing policies and other barriers to living in positive community environments.
Meaning what?
I would say this. So studies show that African Americans, they tend to receive less information than whites about available housing. Also, renters and home buyers, they tend to be steered into neighborhoods with racial compositions that reflect their own race or ethnicity. And parolees often experience discrimination when it comes to securing housing because of the stigma that's often associated with having a felony record. Mm. And so all of these issues or barriers make it incredibly difficult for women in general who are on probation and parole to secure housing in safe neighborhoods.
It strikes me as I hear your ideas it's probably a tough sell, isn't it, when you consider that, let's talk about state resources and state dollars and where they're going to go. The schools need them. The roads need them. Fighting crime. I suspect that's a tough sell, and it makes me wonder what role and what challenge could be issued to churches in these neighborhoods to really make that such a focal point of their outreach.
Sure. I mean, I think churches, you know, can play a role, as well as even case managers and community program staff can play a role, too. So we would argue that it's important to coordinate, for instance, support groups for women who live in poor neighborhoods so that they can meet on a weekly or monthly basis. So having groups, for instance, would allow women to get out of the confines of their home. It would allow them to interact with one another and to build support networks. And in order to enable women to forge bonds with one another, we do believe it's important that safe and reliable transportation should be provided to women to go back and forth to programs and services and to events. And so perhaps female probationers and parolees can be given mentors. Yes, they can also be involved in church groups, church organizations who can help assist with transportation needs, really to help women to obtain new social support networks.
Do you feel these ideas could be expanded really to apply to all parolees and probationers? Are they really specific in your mind to women who are parolees and probationers?
Well, on the one hand, I would say that the recommendations can certainly be applied to both men and women who are on probation and parole who live in poor neighborhoods that have high rates of crime.
Mm-hmm.
However, on the other hand, I would say that it is some of the recommendations we provide are gender specific, particularly in attempts to try to help women develop accessible networks. I will say that studies show that relationships are much more important to women engaged who have contact with the criminal justice system. And in fact, criminal behavior has been found to be a result of involvement with antisocial family members, peers, or even significant others. And in general, women tend to place a high emphasis on connections with others. So women can grow positively if their connections are empowering and pro-social.
And realizing, as you say, that these social connections are so important to women makes it all the more heartbreaking if the scenario of women locking themselves in their homes away from everybody because they're afraid of that environment and what it might lead to.
Absolutely. And, you know, there can be potentially unintended consequences with that. If you're isolated by yourself, it may lead to feelings of depression, mm-hmm. sometimes one feels stressed, and then ultimately they may end up relying on drugs to cope. And I will say all the women in our study, they were substance-involved women. They had used drugs at some point in time. And so we know that going back to drugs as a coping mechanism is a reality, and it may be an unintended consequence if they're certainly isolating themselves from everyone.
Much food for thought. Jennifer Kobina is an assistant professor of criminal justice at Michigan State University and the lead author of this study on female parolees that was published in the journal Race and Justice. Jennifer, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you.